Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Won't tell your story about a woman I know. I come loving. The show. She ain't exactly pretty, ain't exactly small. 4239 56. You can say she got it all.
Check, check, check. Do you want to just give me a little level check?
Hello.
Hello. Check, check.
My name is Rosie.
Rosie Jones. Well, first of all, it's lovely to meet you.
You too. This is so lovely.
It's a cool setting, isn't it? We should give a shout out at the start to Gibson Guitar for allowing us to hang out.
It's so cool.
It's really cool, isn't it?
No idea it was here.
We'll have to see if we can get you a guitar to take home.
Yeah.
Just nothing to see here.
No.
What's on the back? Don't worry about it.
No. Pop it in my back.
There you go, that. Right. We can maybe get a ukulele in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Done. See ya.
Suckers. So you're going out for lunch tonight? Well, dinner tonight.
Well,
to celebrate
no
your new podcast.
This is
lunch.
This. Yeah, I'm being treated. By my own podcast, the producers were like, we should celebrate.
We've had you doing all this work.
Yeah.
And we haven't yet rewarded you with money or food.
No, not yet. We've been in the podcast studio for 30 hours, so... We need at least a hamburger.
At least.
At least.
And a side.
Yeah, one side.
So you've had on Ed Gamble. I heard that one.
Yeah.
Ed's been a guest on
yeah.
this show. What other guests can you tell us about coming up?
Great.
Tease some.
We got Ed Gamble, Nish Kumar, Tom Allen, Susie Rockfall.
I spoke to Susie the other day for this podcast.
Did
yeah,
you?
Lovely lady.
She's
lovely lady.
A dear friend.
Oh, nice.
She's so great.
Yeah, her and Tom have just been in New York, right, for Pride.
Oh, my God, yeah. But did you know why they're there?
I didn't know the...
Because,
the secret reason, no.
They got drunk and bidded on two flights.
Right.
On the Virgin Pride aeroplane, which looked amazing.
So it was all rainbow coloured, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. So they woke up and they were like, oh, we're
I guess we've got to go
to New York. But it looks like they had an amazing time.
I've never been to New York, but I can imagine that a New York Pride would be quite the event.
Yeah, I am. I'm so jealous. I want to be there. I went to New York one year for New Year.
Really? Well, I'm thinking about going for Christmas this year with my friend Derek.
Go.
It must be cold that time of year, though, right?
It is. Freezing.
Really?
We did a tables, and we went and sat on the outside bit. And honestly, I froze. I literally froze into my seat.
Just on the top deck going...
Yeah. And I thought, I'm going to die here.
This is how it happens.
Yeah, but at least I've seen the French apartment block.
Yes, Central Park as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can die happy.
So where did you grow up, Rosie?
I grew up in a seaside town called Bridlington in between Hull and Cigar.
Wow, so you're way, way, way north.
Very north, yeah. It's a tiny town, but growing up it was lovely. But I think I got to about 18 and I went, right, I'm bored now. I don't want to be a fisherman or work in a chippy. So,
and they're the two main career paths for a town like... Is it a similar kind of town to Grimsby?
Yeah, right. Yeah, a lot like that. And it's lovely in winter. In summer, it gets hordes of people from West Yorkshire, from Leeds and Bradford, coming for the holidays. So between like June and September,
can't move.
Just avoid the seaside.
Too many out of towners.
Yeah, too many. We call them wedgies.
Right, right, right.
Too many wedgies.
And what did your mum and dad do?
They were teachers.
Both of them were teachers.
Yeah, so my dad worked in Hull. And my mum actually worked at the secondary school I went to.
So did she teach you?
Yeah.
She did.
She taught me French for 3 years.
Did you get an easy ride because she was your mum, or did you get an even tougher ride?
Tougher.
Really?
Tougher, because I was good at school. I was quite clever, but naturally, I was a talker.
Right. So you like to disrupt the class?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think because of my disability, a lot of teachers let me get away with it. But man.
Did you realise that quite early on then?
Oh, yeah.
You could get a bit of a free pass.
Yeah, I was absolutely milking. But my mum knew, and she
wasn't having it.
No, never.
Did you have brothers and sisters growing up?
Yeah, I got one younger brother, Oliver, who's 5 years younger.
And are you too close?
Yeah. I think I kind of bullied my mum and dad into having him because I would just spend all my time going, when am I getting a brother or a sister? And I think because I was older, because I was nearly 5 when he was born, I really got it, so there wasn't that rivalry between us. I knew that my mum could be there for me and him.
And you weren't worried about favouritism or anything like that?
No, not at all. And actually, I loved looking after him. And when he was about 2 and 3, whenever we would wake up at like 4 a.m, you know, babies like running to their parents' bed. My brother will run
straight to Big Sis.
Straight to me, because he knew I would be up with him playing games.
I love it.
Yeah.
I've got a sister who is 7 years younger than me, so it's a similar kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's nice because, as you say, you're already old enough to understand the dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's none of that, as you say, rivalry or competitive sibling.
No, no. And
fights.
No, we just really, really got on. And I mean, looking back now, my mum and dad had such an easy ride. it was a rule in the house that from my dad, he would come to me and my brother and go, "Now we need to do quiet time."
Right, right.
On a Saturday.
Just for a break.
Yeah, and we can't wake mummy until 11 a.m. That is ridiculous. When I tell her that now, because she's older, she's up at 7, and she said, "I can't believe we told you to play amongst yourself until midday, and you just did it."
Yeah.
We'd be downstairs watching live
Saturday
and
morning cartoons. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, live and kicking Trevor and Simon.
Yeah.
Good times.
SMTV Live, and I would like organisers to make a den in front of the TV and we'd have snacks and play games. So actually, my brother had a third parent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It sounds like it. It sounds like your dad had a pretty easy ride too. He's just kicking back, getting the snacks delivered.
Don't worry. Don't talk to us until 11.
Were you interested in television from a young age then?
Yeah, yeah, massively so. And I always watched everything, and I think I talked about this a lot, but I think because there wasn't a lot of disabled people on TV, it kind of upset me, and then it made me angry that people like me weren't represented in a medium that I love so much. So as I got older, but we're talking about 12 and 13, it was always, "I want to work in TV," and like, for my GCSE English, I found it recently. I wrote an essay about the lack of diversity in television, and I talked about disability because it was always a massive, like, passion of mine, and I do believe that I've been made disabled for a reason and to really make a change. So from that young age, I knew I wanted to work in TV, but, and it sounds ridiculous now, but because I didn't see myself represented on TV, I thought, I'll need to make the change from behind the camera because they're never gonna allow somebody with a speech disability on TV. I am. I say it flippantly, and it is a joke, but I think up until very recently, the disabled people on TV were, in quotations, Hollywood disabled, i.e. they are technically disabled, but they sound able-bodied, they look able-bodied, and I feel like that is easier for someone who isn't comfortable with disability to take in and digest.
You mean the people making the shows as much as the people at home watching them?
Yeah, I think so. They've changed it now, thank God. But for example, if they would have a disabled presenter who was in a wheelchair, and they would have them on the sofa, you wouldn't see the chair.
Yeah, so you wouldn't know.
For everyone watching at home, they were like, oh, they're disabled, but they look also, in quotations, normal. But I think somebody like me, immediately, you know, I'm disabled. I sound disabled. I look disabled. And we are talking a few years ago now because it has got better. But perhaps that was harder for people to take in. So, yeah, when I started out, I thought I would do it slowly from behind the camera, but the idea that I would ever be not only on camera but on the radio, like on podcasts, even now blows my mind.
I love it. So you always had a long-term game plan in mind. You thought, yeah. I'm going to start out, as you said, was your first job a researcher?
Yeah. So what was amazing was, to work in TV, everyone starts as a runner. And there, three main jobs are to drive people around, to make tea, and then to literally run, make errands, just make sure a TV show runs properly. And
you're like a general dog's body.
Yeah. And honestly, they are underpaid and overworked.
Yeah.
Like, without runners, a TV show wouldn't
cease to run. Yeah.
Yeah, they're incredible. But for me, I can't drive, I can't make tea, and I cannot run. So it would have been very hard for me to make my way in TV. But what was amazing was Channel 4 do what's called a diversity trainee scheme. And it's...
Is that with colleges, with universities, or is it just like an open scheme thing that anyone can apply
open
for?
Open. You don't need a degree. I had one.
What did you study in?
English.
Lovely, me too. Up top, yes. High five.
Yes. And again, when I was choosing, I deliberated studying media, but I wanted to keep it open, and I've always been a writer. That's always been my biggest passion, so I wanted a degree that would help me work in TV, but also help writing.
Allow you other options.
Yeah. Keep it open.
Do you find with writing that you're able to completely express yourself then? Is that where you feel like you can really get your ideas across?
And at school, at A-level, my two favourite subjects were English and drama, and I absolutely adored acting, and I was alright at it, and when I was choosing what to do after 18, my drama teacher said, apply for drama schools. But at that time, I said to her, no, because if I get in, if I graduate, success for me in this world would be occasionally playing the victim, because back then it was 2008. You didn't get disabled people
in like leading roles.
Leading roles in dramas and soaps, and I was aware that I just needed more tools to make a difference. So I decided to study English and writing so I could write my own story and write characters who are meaty and raw and flawed and three-dimensional, and they might just happen to be disabled. So it astounds me that was my plan 12 years ago, and I think it's going to plan.
Yeah.
I think I'm doing all right.
I'd say.
So then.
So you get this scheme. So you enter the scheme with Channel 4.
Scheme. So it just allowed me a leg up, and I started in the TV world as a trainee researcher, which is one up from
a runner.
Running, so I leapfrogged over making tea, which
nicely
I think
done.
Everybody is grateful for. So it was my job as a researcher to collect information.
What was the show you were working on, or was it a series of different shows?
Series of different shows. I was a researcher for 6-7 years. I was a researcher for a lot longer than I should have been, because I think that last 2 years of my career in TV, I was doing stand-up in the evenings, so I knew I didn't want to step up and take a job with more responsibilities, because TV work is technically 10 to 6.
Yep.
But it's not.
Yeah, it's it's
like
round
7
the clock.
To midnight.
But if you want to make it as well, you have to work twice as hard as the other person. Otherwise, they'll get the job, right?
That's it. But I think definitely my last year in TV as a researcher, because I always worked with essentially my mates.
Yeah.
Well,
because you've been in the field for so long and you knew everyone.
And it is like a small pool of people, especially in the comedy entertainment world. Everyone knows each other. And it just became like unsaid agreement that they would employ me and pay me as a researcher, knowing that they were getting an experienced researcher.
And did you enjoy that role as well?
Yeah. I really enjoyed it, and I loved working with my friends and on shows. But yeah, because I was experienced, it was like an unsaid agreement that I could leave at 6.
Nice.
On the dot. So then I would go and I'd gig wherever, gig 5 times a week, all right.
Where was the interest in comedy first realised, and when did it begin to start manifesting? Was it from a very young age, or was it?
I think it's always been there. And I come from a very funny family that, like, my childhood was just sitting around the dinner table for hours, eating everything and laughing. But actually, in my family, I'm not the funny one.
Really?
And now it was...
So you just had it passed down.
Yeah, that's it. It was always my mum and my brother taking the stage, as it were, and me and my dad laughing.
You're more
along.
Like the audience.
But then with my disability in the outside world, I found that people patronised me, or they assumed that I was intellectually disabled, and no one liked a smart aleck. So I knew I couldn't, get over that by, outsmarting them. But a fun way to crack a joke, and that works on many levels. It shows that I'm intellectually capable, but then also it breaks any tension that might form. And also it shows that I'm a nice, friendly person. So, looking back now, I had jokes, as it were, in my back pocket forever. I mean, they're rubbish, obvious jokes. But things like, oh, I'm not disabled, I'm drunk. Well, it's all right, when I'm drunk, I walk straight. It's when I'm sober, I get the wobbles. But things like that on a one-to-one level just break the ice. So...
it's one of the last, I think, perhaps taboo subjects, isn't it?
Completely.
That a lot of people are still weirded out by uncertain of. And
yeah.
So I guess with someone like you, what you're doing is normalising it and stripping away the taboos. Yeah. And
I knew I could do that on a one-to-one basis. But then slowly I thought I want to do it on a
stage, and
if it takes me 2 minutes to change one person's view on me and disability in general, can I do that in the same amount of time to a group of 50 people? And it's so interesting that when I started out in comedy, in stand-up, every gig would be tough. Like I would wobble on stage, and before they liked me as a comedian, I had to win them over. It was kind of like I started on the back foot, because first they had to think, oh, she's okay, and then go, oh, she's funny. So it would always take me about 2 minutes to win them round. And when
if you've only got a 5 minute slot, that's a big chunk of that time, isn't it?
Yeah. But over time, man, I think it's because I gig a lot and I've been on TV a bit, and like people now, on the whole, if they haven't seen me, they know a bit about me. So I found that recently, especially in London, I can go on stage and go, hello, here's a funny thing that happened in Poundland. You know, I don't need to go, let's talk about my disability, because they're like, oh, that's Rosie.
That's not the sole defining characteristic of who you are.
Yeah. But interestingly, I did a gig the other week in Belfast, and I think I went on stage a little bit, maybe cocky, but thinking, I'm Rosie, like...
I've got this.
Yeah. And I really felt a bit of awkwardness, and it became quite clear quickly that they didn't know who I was, so I did need to put that foundation in and go, oh, yeah, by the way, this is my disability. And, like, it was fine in 3 minutes, but it did make me think, oh, I have it easy now in London because we've got over this awkwardness. But it's made me excited that if I've done that in London in 3 years, not even...
I mean, in the scheme of comedy, no time at all, really,
yeah.
Right?
So it's exciting to think what I can do in the next 10, 20 years.
What year was your first Edinburgh? I know we're not supposed to talk about the E word, but...
Don't say the E word! 2016. I mean, looking back now, I was an idiot. Nobody really told me how to do comedy, how to do Edinburgh. And what people normally do is they visit Edinburgh so they know what the deal is. And they do a few open spots. And then the next year they might share an hour with a friend or two to get into that rhythm of how to deal with performing every day for 4 weeks. And then you might do your own 40-minute show, and then you'll do the next year your hour show. So
you've had a nice gradual slow build up towards it.
Really,
you just went straight in, right?
Well, I went straight in with 40 minutes, which is the longest time I'd done to that point. And at that point, I was performing one or two times a week because I was still working in TV. So to go from twice a week to every single day plus 3 or 4 open mic spots and then not knowing my way around Edinburgh.
Yeah. Did you have any friends up there that you knew already, or did you sort of go up alone?
Not really. I had a few friends. I mean, it sounds tragic. It's not because I get on with everyone. So, like, that's another thing about Edinburgh. Every day's a party day.
Right, is it? Because yeah. I was talking to Susie about this, but she was like, no, not me. But...
Oh, yeah. So,
she's the well-behaved one, is she, Edinburgh?
Well, I'm living with Susie.
Oh, nice.
She's
nice.
I think she'll be good for
a good
me.
Grounding influence, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, so, my first year going there, I was like a kid in a sweet shop, like, just the fact that I could stay out till 5 a.m. with cool people every single day made me go, yes,
I'm having a bit of this.
And my show was at 3 p.m., which meant that I would end my show with a double woman coat.
And then it would start.
Yeah. So I'd start on the double spirits from four.
From four, yeah.
And you can't keep that up. I got a cold on my third day.
Day three.
Day
amazing.
Three. And I couldn't shake it off because I refused to have a night off. So I loved it, but I came back.
It was a baptism of fire for you, was it?
Completely. Yeah. But it was great because I flushed it out of my system. And last year, when I did my first hour, I was so sure that the most important part of my Edinburgh experience was my hour, was my hour show, and everything else surrounding that needed to feed into me being the best person to perform that show. So I, caught a drunk. I mean, it'd be rude not to.
My but, kind of girl, Rosie.
Yeah, but I didn't go out as much.
And if you did, it wouldn't be maybe till five. It'd be till, you know, one.
Yeah.
Respectable
Bye-bye.
Time.
And then I'd have a lot of naps and I'd eat well. Oh, that's another thing I did. In my first year, I love a hot dog.
Right.
I really love a hot dog. I accidentally ate a hot dog every single day for 22 days.
Now that's what you call a balanced diet.
Yeah, accidentally. I think it was about day 17 where I thought.
Hang on a minute.
Have I? Oh, yeah, better keep it up now. So, yeah, last year I ate a lot. But I think I only have four hot dogs.
Very good. Great. Very good. And you're going back. So this year will be your third time there, will it?
Yeah, third time, second hour. And that's really exciting because I feel like there's a lot of pressure for your first hour because a lot of people are looking at you and this is really your first opportunity to go, this is me, this is who I am, this is what I want to say in my comedy. So there was a lot of pressure on me to come up with a good hour. Whereas this year I feel like I can delve into stuff a bit more. It doesn't need to be as much of an introduction. It kind of...
You got a bit more freedom to experiment.
Yeah, it's a bit like, oh, I'm Rosie, you get me, you get why I talk like this. Now can we move on?
Yeah.
Can we really get into something meatier and really in this hour, I kind of been a lot more personal and I'm delving deeper into things. It's less of this is me and more this is a little story, this is a part of me.
Perhaps the last year was this is what I am and now you're saying this is who I am.
That's yeah? It. That's it.
Love
yeah.
It.
And I think it's last year was how I see the world. This year it's a lot about how the world sees me and how I take on their opinions and how it makes me who I am.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Having only met you for half an hour today, I can't imagine you ever being down or sad, but obviously we all feel those,
yeah,
these dark times. I mean, do you ever get beaten down or upset or angry or hurt with the way the world does see you, or do you try and keep a positive spin and live your life with spring in your step?
Yeah, I am so positive. And also, at the moment, when my career going so well,
she touched her head for the benefit of the listeners.
Full of wood. There isn't a lot to be down about where I am right now, but I am human and I do get down, but I think what helps me is a confidence within me and know who I am. I like who I am and I think I need that more than the average person because I do gonna swear. Yeah. I do deal with a lot of shit on a daily basis. But because I've dealt with that all my life, it kind of just, it's a way of life now. So, for example, the other day, Saturday, I did a gig and it went all right, you know, it wasn't one of my standout performances. And it was on the South Bank, and it was a hot summer Saturday evening, and the South Bank on days like that.
It's chaos.
Oh, chaos. And it attracts all the dickheads.
Yeah.
And I'd had my hair cut, and I'd had it cut, and usually I walk around London wearing massive headphones, I do love music and I love podcasts, but I wear them so I can't hear what people are shouting or saying or laughing. And it's not constant, but it's probably a common every day. And because of my personality, I just go, well, that happens, they're wrong, I'm confident with who I am, but I'd rather not hear it.
Of course,
I'll wear headphones and I'll be in my own little
happy world. In the zone, yeah.
But because I'd had my hair cut, I didn't
want to spoil them. Yeah.
And actually, I think it was even worse because of the time and where I was, and like it's a big headache, but I look nice. I look nicer than usual, so I think I was attracting people's attention or going, why does that lady with nice hair, why is she stumbling everywhere? And I just got people like shouting at me like, oh, you're out of view, oh, look at her. And it just wasn't what I needed. And I put my headphones on and I was in the right mood. And I hadn't had a mood like that in so long. I was like, I've had a shit gig. I'm surrounded by dickheads. I'm like, one effort with my hair and now it's ruined. I just want to go home. I'm tired. I want to watch Love Island, and it was what I needed right then. I felt a tap on my shoulder, and it was two of my friends.
Oh, lovely, they were just there by chance.
Yeah, just happened to be there. And then we ended up talking on the concourse at Waterloo for nearly 2 hours, and I went home going, yeah, like I was in a mood, but that's what matters. It's just surrounding yourself with great people, and I think actually that is one of the advantages to having a disability. I do meet some people Hey, don't even look at me. And don't talk to me. And for me, it's like, oh, great, you're rebel and you've saved me years of...
Wasting my time on you.
Yeah, so I've really got quite a group of friends right now, and
well, I think comedy is very good for that as well, isn't it? Like, comedians seem to be very close with fellow comedians, and it seems to be a very supportive, positive scene to be involved in.
And if they're friends with me, they are good people. So yeah, I do get down. I'm not like Tigger.
Always bouncing.
I do have my ill moments, but when I do, I just need to step back and go, I'm happy, I got great friends, I got a loving, supporting family, I'm
killing it in your career.
Yeah, working in my dream career, I'm settled, and as I said, I like who I am, and I feel that if you like who you are, people can shout whatever. And there's something within me that goes, you're wrong.
There's two things I want to ask you about before we wrap up.
Yeah.
One is Silent Witness. And I'd love to hear about the experience of delving into the serious side of acting on, you know, such an established show.
Yeah.
And yeah, how was that for you?
Well, that was so funny because, as I said, I'd studied drama to A level. So I knew how to act, but I was by no means a trained actor. And my agent at the time put me forward for this role. And I thought, my bloody got no chance of getting this. And I went for it. And I think working in TV, being so comfortable with
like being
camera,
on set,
knowing like what a director does, knowing how to get the best out of an actor. And by no means am I saying not being trained is the best way to go, but for me, working in TV was like the drama school training. So I got the job, and it was incredible. And I actually filmed it the month after my first Edinburgh.
Oh, wow.
So I've gone from drinking those, not sleeping, performing comedy four times a day. And at the end of August, I was like, I do not want to make anybody laugh ever again. I'm done. So Silent Witness was
perfectly timed, yeah.
Because I had a really serious role, and it was really like groundbreaking for the BBC because it was the first primetime drama to have three of the main cast have a disability, which is huge. I mean, it's awful that it took to 2018 to see that, but it was a powerful storyline, and I'm still so proud to say I was part of that.
From being that young girl watching television and noticing that there's a void there, yeah, to then...
Yeah, that's it.
Being in it. That's great. Void.
Yeah. So I love acting. It's still a big passion of mine. And I think in the future I would love to do more serious roles, but for now comedy is taking most of my time, and I got no complaints about that.
I love it. It's so lovely to meet you, Rosie.
So
what a fun chat. You'll have to come on again sometime. I want to ask you finally, because I always like to pry into people's personal lives when I have them
on.
How's your love life? What's the story?
Oh, my God. How is my love life? Well, what I do, I get crushes on people. When I crush on someone, I crush hard. I feel like if I was like any character in literature, I'm like Romeo.
Okay.
You know how...
Hopeless romantic.
How he's like Rosalind. She is amazing. And then he sees Julia and is
amazing.
Like, no, Julia. Who was Rosalind? Like, Julia's the one for me. I do that. And
so you fall in love quickly, but then you don't stay in love.
No.
Right.
No,
right.
I got to move on. And
heartbreaker.
It's always in my head. Like, I always have these like epic love affairs, and I tell my friends, and they're like, "Have you told her?" And I'm like, "Oh no! I just like it in my head." And I mean, it sounds like I'm making excuses, but with my career now, I literally have
too busy.
No time to sleep or to eat. So the idea of finding and getting a girlfriend is not for me right now.
Do you like being single? Are you happy and content on your own?
Very happy. I love being on my own because my job is so sociable that I can go days without being on my own. So when I do get that opportunity to take a breather, have a bath, listen to some music, it makes me go, "Oh, I would much rather do that than to go on a first date with a
Dating's the worst, right?
Yeah.
It's great, obviously, if you're into the person, but the idea for me of doing the dating apps and...
No. And I think also it's a combination of like accepting my sexuality later on.
How old were you when you came out?
25.
And how old were you when you realised?
Oh, well,
much younger,
it
or?
Sounds so strange, but I remember thinking, I want to kiss you. And I don't know why, because I'm a girl and you're a girl. And girls are meant to kiss the boys. And I was four.
So you knew really young.
Yeah. But then I would pop it to the back of my head. And like growing up, I'd have thoughts where I'd be like, I don't know why I really like Rachel from Friends. I like her a lot. I'm thinking about her a lot. Oh, I just much like her as a friend. So then, and it sounds silly, it's something I use in my stand up, but for years I honestly thought, I can't be gay because I'm disabled. And that's...
Why did you think that? You just didn't want to be two boxes of different
and double up. Back to television and representation. You would have gay people, then you'd have disabled people. And also, all of this, now that I'm an out, proud gay woman, all of this sounds ridiculous, but I honestly thought, I can't come out because people won't accept me to be even more different. I felt like people would freak out and go, oh, no, you can't be both things. And I think also because it's a problem in the media and this idea of disability and sex is such a taboo subject for a lot of years. I thought, well, I know I'm gay, but nobody else needs to know because of my disability. They don't need to know because I'll never meet someone. Like, no one will ever find me attractive. So I felt like, and it sounds tragic, but actually, for me, it was just a matter of fact. It was like, okay, I'm gay, but no one needs to know. And the idea, and it is still correct to some extent, but the idea of dying, hopefully at a very old age, and going, did I have a great career? Yes. Did I have great friends? Yes. Did I have a loving family? Yes. Did I do everything I wanted to do in life. Yes. Did I have a partner? No. I honestly think I could still die happy because I am such an independent person. I feel like meeting somebody would be great, but I'm not pinning my whole life on it because I'm so busy and so happy with where I am and who I am. And if someone wants to join me in my happiness, great, but it's not the be all and end all.
I think you've described my situation to a T as well. Yeah. Love my life, happy with my career, great friends, lovely family, really kind of pleased and content with everything I'm doing at the moment in life. And if I do meet someone to share it with, brilliant. But if not, I'm not going to feel hard done by.
That's it.
Life's pretty good, right?
Life is.
It was as good as you
amazing.
Make it.
Amazing. Yeah. So good.
Do you get, final question is, do you get many people coming up to you and sort of saying thank you for raising awareness of disability issues through your stand-up?
I do.
And that must be an incredibly rewarding thing to experience for yourself, right?
So great. I get a lot of messages online, and my favourite ones, I get them quite a lot, from parents of disabled people who say, like, we've had quite a tough day, we've realised that our child has this disability and we don't know how to cope later in life. And then put Facebook on or YouTube and a video of you popped up, and it made me realise that it doesn't necessarily mean that I have a bad life. It might have a tougher life, but seeing you talk so openly and be so positive has given me hope. And it messages like that mean that when I do have shit gigs at the South Bank.
Damn you, South Bank. You won't be getting booked there again anytime soon.
Please book me. I love you. When I do get shouted in the street, when I do get called names, I just think about messages like that, and to give a parent of a child with a disability a little glimpse of hope and just a good chuckle makes me go, oh yeah, that's why I do it.
Rosie, I think you're a wonderful woman.
Thank you.
And you're also hilarious. Well, I know we've been quite serious in our talk today, but I am a big fan of your work. And thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your story.
Oh, I've loved it.
Me too. And good luck with this Edinburgh preparation.
Thank
I'm sure you're going to ace it.
It'll be all right.
It'll be all right on the night, every night.
Yeah.
Thanks for a great talk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.